Hello, I'm Sam Clements, and welcome to this special episode of The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast. Well, I guess this is the director's cut, really, of something that was mentioned in the July episode of our podcast. We were joined by great musician and now filmmaker Questlove to talk about his new film, Summer of Soul, and it was a fascinating interview, really great stuff, and we had to cut some of it down because it was a section of a longer podcast and we couldn't feature the whole thing. And we loved the interview so much. That was brilliantly done by our podcast producer, Kobe Omanaka, that actually we wanted to put the whole thing out now, as we're actually at the weekend where Summer of Soul, the film that Kobe and Questlove talk about, is available in cinemas. So without further ado, here is Questlove and Kobe talking about the brand new film, Summer of Soul. I think this interview works whether you're about to see the film, whether you have a passing interest in the film, or whether you've just come out of screening and you want to hear some more from the director. If you haven't seen the film, though, it's in cinemas now. Go and watch it. What are you waiting for? Anyway, here we go. Questlove talking to Kobe about Summer of Soul.
Questlove, thank you very much for joining us here talking about your film, primarily Summer of Soul. But first of all, I want to say just, well, my life's been underpinned slightly by yourselves. I've been, I'm a big fan of Hamilton, so I've seen what you've been doing on Zoom with Helpless. And last year, in the lockdown, was when I came across your podcast, Questlove Supreme. So first of all, I want to say thank you for helping me survive the past kind of 18 months of this pandemic.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. That's why I did it.
When we're doing this junket on Zoom, and I think you kind of mastered the medium. If that was something, an accolade you wanted beforehand.
Who knew the power of technology? Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, normally I would have to take time out from work, fly over and, you know, do one-on-ones, but this is one of the benefits of what we had to go through last year.
Well, as I said at the top, thank you for bringing Summer Soul. It's an astonishing film, and yeah, I loved it to bits. Kind of the first few images, we're talking about the pandemic, I realized like how much I missed that live experience of music and theater and even being in the cinema. So I mean, how much of music and a live experience is part of your life? And obviously you're a drummer in the Roots, but how much have you kind of missed that?
I missed it a lot. So last Friday I get a call from Dave Chappelle. This is like the life of Dave Chappelle. He's like, yo, I'm at Bradley Cooper's house right now. Me, Rock, Zoe Kravitz are going to go down to Blue Note. Come meet us. And so I'm like, wait, Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle about to do comedy at the Blue Note Jazz Club? Okay. So I go there and I didn't realize that we were all going there to see Robert Glasper to perform. So this is technically the first concert I've been to. Of course, Dave Chappelle, being Dave Chappelle, puts me on the spot and is like, hey, Amir's in the house. Go get on drums, Amir. And, you know, if you know the level of musicianship that Robert Glasper is, I was like, yo, I've not been on a drum set in 15 months, yo. Like,
oh, really?
I mean, I don't count the Tonight Show.
Sure. All right.
Because it's so second nature. It's second nature. Sure. And really, it's like we're playing anywhere between 15 seconds to 45 seconds interstitials. So it's not like I'm doing a concentrated 20-minute straight performance. So, yeah, there's a lot of muscle memory. And the thing was, is that in the pandemic, not once did I get on my drum set to practice, which kind of shocked me, but relieved me a little bit. So it was a trial by fire thing where Dave Chappelle just threw me right in the lake. And like now in front of an audience, I got to see if I still have it. I would have given myself a 6 or a 7 out of 10, but
that's not bad. That's not bad after 15 months. I think that's okay.
It's not bad, but yeah, it did let me know. Like this is a really weird time period where we're just all slowly going out in the world and doing. Like I feel like a brand new baby, and so I mean it's a good feeling to have. I'm going to cherish this moment, but I'm also wondering how much of the new normal I do want to go back to.
Yeah.
So, yes, in doing this Summer of Soul film, you know, the quiet of the pandemic. So I'll say that by the time that we got to March of 2020, we were just in the, I'll say the 60% period of finishing the film. So the last 40% of doing this movie between March of 2020, and we wrapped it up in July. this taught me a lot about myself as a human being, as far as being resourceful, because we basically almost had to start all over. Like all the interviews we had off the table, all the people that we were going to interview off the table, the technology to do these interviews off the table. So we had to use our smarts to just figure out like, how are we going to do this?
When you're reconfiguring this or putting it together in the first place, how important was it to try and get this to an audience seeing it in the cinema so they could almost recreate, relive the experience as those guys in Harlem in 69?
I'm going to be honest with you. It's easy for me to see this in other people, but not see this in myself. Like a great example is Michael Jackson. Like his obsession without doing Thriller. I'm going to do 100 million. And the whole time I'm like looking at the process of Michael trying to sell 100 million as opposed to 40 million of Thriller. It's really hard to capture lightning in a bottle. And the success of Thriller was, yes, it was a great album. It was executed well, but it was also the timing of it.
Yeah.
Thriller came out right when MTV was 1 year old and they both rode each other to glory. America discovered MTV and Michael Jackson tailed onto MTV and built an empire. The thoughts weren't lost on me that perhaps this film might come out at a time where the world might open up and this might be their first experience in the world. And that might even change perception of the film. Like, we're free. What's there to see? Oh, damn, the Summer of Soul movie. And then, you know, that makes the experience better. Timing is everything. Mm-hmm. So I will say that even the period of which this film is coming out, right when the world, at least in America, is starting to really open up. And this is one of the seven films that's coming out for the summer. You know, you can't plan lightning in a bottle. But yes, I absolutely knew that we kind of went in with the energy that maybe when this film is done next year, and we don't have any clue. You know, like we did this film in July. We finished in July of 2020. So, you know, the election's still happening. We don't know who's going to be president. We don't know none of that stuff. But it was a step on faith. Like maybe perhaps it'll be a pleasant environment next year when this film comes out. And people will want some relief. So yeah, hopefully for next summer, we might make it happen.
I'm a big fan of music documentaries and I've seen music documentaries at home. I saw Amy at the cinema. I saw Let It Be at the cinema and they're both immeasurably better by being in that cinematic experience. So, and this again, this is something to me that needs to be seen on the big screen to get the full extent of it. And for you as the curator behind this, I mean, the soundscape in this, the making sure everything was on point. I mean, that's part of the cinema experience as well as being absorbed with the people around you.
You know, it was weird for me. Okay, so I was wondering with this process with music, because now I have a lot of my musician friends who now create their entire albums on their laptops. And I came from an era where you went to the studio, you created in the studio, you could blast the volume on these big ass speakers and really feel your music. And I started noticing that I could tell people that created their stuff on their computers and really not in a studio environment based on how the album was mixed. Because now we listen, we get our music from our laptops and we get our music in our headphones, as opposed to like my version of hip hop is you're thinking about the car. Like, going to blast in the car like crazy. Where the car isn't exactly the destination spot now. Now it's our headphones. Now you got to mix stuff differently for that.
It's not just your headphones. It's the little AirPods as well, isn't it? The little tiny
buds. And so the thing was, I saw my film for the first time on the big screen with an audience last Saturday. And it was like watching a whole new film. And there's one particular scene. It's the most tragic part of the movie, but it's hilarious to me. So it's the moment where Jesse Jackson is recalling the last moments of Martin Luther King. And he's telling this story to us. I didn't even ask him the question. We just happened to be talking about the Lorraine Motel and Benjamin Branch, the saxophone player. And he tells the story of Martin Luther King. So when we're mixing this, and there's a moment where he startled me because you're listening to the story. And then when he gets to the point where Martin's about to lose his life, he says, and then they bow. And when I was in the interview chair, I jumped and I remembered like, yo, that's what I want to happen. I want people to have the same experience I had when I jumped out my chair, when he's telling me the story one-on-one. So when we're mixing the story, I was on my editor, Josh, and my producer, David, like, yo, when he says pow, I need you to really mix this. I want the audience, I want it to be like a horror film. And so when that moment happens, and unfortunately, I'm in the front row, so I didn't want to be Captain Obvious and turn around and see everyone's but when it happened, and he said, you know, Martin Luther King was like, yeah, I want to bow. The whole audience jilted, and then they all collectively looked at me like, you did this. Like, I'm serious. They were like dropping their snacks, and like, that was the effect. And that's when I realized, like, oh, this is a whole nother experience inside of a theater than it is watching on my laptop. Every time I watched this film was on my computer, so it was different for me.
Questa, what's taking you so long to make a film? I've followed your career for decades, and I've seen you guys play in Manchester and UK. And when I heard about this film, I was like, oh, this is your directorial debut. I went to Wikipedia and there's nothing, it didn't say director up until this morning. I've changed that because it wasn't there. So you can check that now. Set it on there.
I always wanted to know who updates my Wikipedia. You know, with the exception of a Commons Come Close video, I almost had a disdain for the process. Like, even with the Roots videos, there was a time when we got in trouble with Biggie over the What They Do video because of my absolute carelessness and the part of video processing that I hate. You know, I just showed up on set. All right, where do I stand? All right, okay, do a few times. All right, I'm out. Not knowing that, you know, the director might have made a reference to a Biggie video that I wasn't aware of. Like, that's how disconnected I was from the process of the visual medium. I had to be convinced to do this film. I'm at the Tonight Show, and I get a note that these two gentlemen want to talk to me about this project that they have, about this mythical festival. And in my mind, I'm like, well, I know everything about music, so that didn't happen because it's not on Wikipedia. I don't know nothing about no Stevie Wonder and Sly and the Family Stone in Harlem. I know everything. And so they come to me, and then next thing you know, they're like, here's 40 hours of footage. I'm like, wait, this actually happened? So then I got scared. I was like, wait a minute. Well, why me? Like, why me? And they kept saying, why not you? And I'm like, why me? Like, get a real director. And they're like, you're a real director. And I'm like, I've never done this in my life. What makes you think I can do it? And they were like, well, let's see. You've written 4 books. You teach class at NYU. You have a podcast. You know how to tell a story. My girlfriend puts it better. She says that I entered this thing with, am I? Am I? And she's like, now it's your time to grow up and turn that am I into I am. And that's what happened.
I mean, as well as being a music documentary, and one of the great things I love about any kind of documentary is uncovering stories, tidbits, things you didn't know. This is the latest and recent trend of uncovering non-white stories that have been hidden in the UK and in the States. So looking at the Tulsa Race Massacre came to a lot of people's attention from Watchmen, watching Small Acts, the Steve McQueen series in the UK.
Especially that second episode. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Lovers Rock was the second one for you guys.
Yes.
A Mangrove is based on a true story here in the UK. So how big a part of that was that uncovering the story? You said you didn't know about it. So it must've been like a crate digging almost to find the next track to find the story in there.
Fortunately for this film, there was such an abundance of riches. Yeah, stories just kept telling themselves. Like, I was unaware of the feeling of the moon landing.
Yeah.
Until Stevie Wonder and, you know, Gene, his musical director, did this little comedy bit based on the moon landing, and the audience started booing. I'm like, wait, why is the audience booing? I didn't know that Black people didn't like this. Then we had to do the research, and then we saw interview footage, and it's like, well, this is historical. We have to include this. We didn't know that. I grew up in a period where, like, in school, you were taught this was a good thing, and this is for mankind, and this, you know, progress. And so a lot of the things that I found out about this film, like Charlene Hunter Galt being the first person in the New York Times to refer to us as Black and the struggle that she had, like, I'm learning this based on someone saying something, and now I got to uncover and investigate that story and say, okay, let's include that. So if anything, like, my first draft was 3 hours and 25 minutes. We had to whittle it down to 2 hours. Like, it was too much information, way too much information. But yeah, I will say that in light of this film coming out, my DMs have been like just off the hook with people writing me about, hey, I don't know if you know this, but there's about 20 hours of footage of blah, blah, blah that you might want to look at. You know, the Isley brothers did something in 1973 for 12 hours of footage. And this, like, so there are other stories just like this out there. There are at least six that I've been made aware of like 5 weeks ago. It's time to look under the hood.
What was your reaction to the acts that appear in the film? Because you have, for the UK audiences, some of the smaller acts are less well known. I mean, for me, for example, I didn't know that David Ruffin was the lead singer of Temptations. So when he comes onto the stage and starts singing My Girl, I'm like, who's this guy singing My Girl? I'm not going to have that. But then there's things like Stevie Wonder playing drums. I've seen Stevie Wonder live. I didn't know who played the drums. I'm like, what the heck? This is brilliant. This is how you start your documentary.
Yeah. So the way I wanted to pace this, I was sort of wrestling with how do I tell the story. And weird enough, I had to go, this is such a meta moment. At the time when I started, I just released my fourth book, Creative Quest, of which I'm trying to plant seeds and give an idea as to how you should be creative. One of the things that I forgot was that when I prepare DJ sets and shows, I work backwards. So in absorbing this 40 hours of footage, like it's 40 hours of footage, and it's taken me about 5 to 6 months to process all 40 hours and take notes on what's good, what gives me goosebump, what works. And so once I compiled a good 30 or 40 moments of musical moments that I felt like were really powerful, I started backwards. So I knew that Nina Simone's performance was the exclamation point that we needed to end the film. But I definitely knew that Stevie Wonder doing a drum set was a way for me to insert myself in the film without inserting myself into the film. It's kind of like a wink, because people even said, like, well, are you in your own movie or not? And the real question was, no, I didn't want to insert myself in the movie. However, seeing Stevie Wonder in a light that you never see him is probably the perfect way to start this film. And so that's, once I had my beginning and my end, the middle sort of just came together on its own. But I knew that I needed an ass-kicking beginning and a really powerful ending.
Yeah, I had one statement, which was Nina Simone, though, and that's where I've got to leave it. But Questlove, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about Summer of Soul. Highly recommend everyone gets to the cinema to watch it.
Thank you, Questlove, and thank you, Kobe, for doing that interview for us. We should get you on mic more. What are you doing behind the scenes? Anyway, so the film they were talking about, Summer of Soul, is in cinemas right now. Highly recommend seeing it on the big screen and hearing it through those cinema surround sound speakers. They've done such a good job of restoring the footage of the concert and, I guess most importantly, you know, sound mixing it to work with a modern cinema surround sound system. It looks great and it sounds even better. That's it for this mini episode of the podcast. We'll be back for a full episode at the beginning of August with two brand new guest film critics. We've also got a very special guest, an interview with Jude Law on that episode. So if you're not subscribed already, please subscribe. That will appear in your feed when it's ready, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.